Welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman, also known as H for the sake of convenience on that show, because normally I'm joined by another Ryan, but that Ryan is off celebrating New Year somewhere. And instead, I'm joined by another individual whose name will not be a problem. This is Andrew Brown, who our listeners of Sound of Play and Kane and Rince will know of, but is new to the Playwright community. So welcome, Andrew.
Thank you for having me. I'm very fascinated by what you have going on over here.
You do a few video gamey type podcasts. You're not in the development space yourself, but you certainly are in the kind of critical space. Rub a lot of elbows as well in that community.
Yeah, I do all right. People seem to follow me for reasons passing my comprehension, but I'm in there. I'm out there.
Yeah. Yep. And that's all we can be. All right. So the way that this show works is that we're each going to deliver a short little video game pitch. I mean, it can be as detailed or as sparse as we want it to be. And we will both spend 10 minutes kind of workshopping each of those ideas until they become something that somebody could theoretically make a game out of. Anyways, I'll get us started off to kind of show you how to get this ball rolling. What I want to pitch today is a first-person shooter, an action game where you are in a kind of a standard first-person shooter type of environment, and you are tasked with getting to the end of, you know, whatever this course is. It's like a Half-Life 2 level, so it's more kind of a long stretch rather than a series of combat encounters. It's kind of about getting from one place to another. But in this case, every enemy you kill removes an object from the environment, and it doesn't just remove it, it makes it invisible, but all of the boundary boxes are still on that object. So it just makes it a lot harder to navigate. It becomes kind of like a reverse Unseen Swan, where that's the name of it, right? Unseen Swan? Gosh, now the Unfinished Swan, that's the one.
Yeah.
I knew something about it didn't sound right. But it makes it harder to see the more enemies you kill. So you're removing the combat threat, but adding a navigational difficulty. Let's workshop this and see where we can get with it in 10 minutes, starting now. So, what is the kind of first touchstone, the first thing that kind of comes to your mind when you are picturing this? Do you see any challenges, anything that would be a roadblock to developing a game like this?
I would be concerned about people whose first instinct is to kill everything, because they probably wouldn't like this game very much. Not that that's not a reason
exactly
to do it.
That's exactly the kind of person that... because you have that moment where you're realizing what the mechanic is, and you're realizing how deep of a hole you just dug yourself into following your initial instincts.
Yeah, so the game would kind of break down to a series of risk and reward decisions where, like, mm-hmm. this enemy is perpetually in my way, and is it worth it to stealth around it or whatever mechanics are going to be in the game? Maybe this is just a pure parkour game. I don't know. We could go either way on that. But is it more valuable to kill this enemy so we don't have to deal with them, but then have to deal with whatever it is it makes invisible in the environment? Or is it better to sneak around it so that way that vital could be wall that's in the way right before the ending, you can actually see it and you can navigate around it?
Yeah, you mentioned a parkour game, kind of like Mirror's Edge, but something like Doom as well, something that's really fast where you aren't necessarily, you know, wall jumping or anything like that, but mm-hmm. you are moving with intense speed and you have that kind of maneuverability would be a good touch point as well. I also think about Crash Bandicoot, actually, when I think about this, because there's a lot of interesting challenges. Crash Bandicoot levels are pretty much just get to the end and you pass, but there's interesting kind of like sub-challenges that you can choose to engage with along the way, primarily destroying every crate in the level. And I think it's the first level of the first Crash Bandicoot, there's a pit with a bunch of crates that are all lined up as a bridge across the across the pit. And so you can either use that as a bridge and just run across it, or if you bounce on them and, you know, if you're trying to break every crate, you'll need to bounce across them and just be very careful that you hit all of them, that you don't overshoot, that you don't undershoot and drop into the pit as like an additional challenge. And so, yeah, kind of creating those like tiered challenges in that way, maybe color coding the enemies. So if you kill red enemies, then red objects disappear. And maybe you can think, okay, I've kind of memorized the pattern of invisible or the pattern of red blocks that are like a maze over this pit, kind of like you would see in the those disappearing blocks in Mario Galaxy, or not Mario Odyssey, had that just recently, where you kind of have to memorize where blocks are and then you can make them invisible.
Going back to your comment about Doom, mm-hmm. in Doom 2016, it's very important, if not vital, to remain alive that you stay in constant combat and constant practically melee combat with enemies. Yeah. So like you basically always have to be a whirlwind of death in that game just to compete. I think this might be maybe a chance for to make an anti-Doom where you do have to do all of those things, but at the end, instead of tearing off your enemy's jaw and using it to impale their eye, you actually use that to push them away from you. So that way they are still in combat and still a threat, but they are also still alive. So that way the vital piece of the geography that they keep around is still visible. And then you could work your way past them or get outside of their aggro range, however that's going to work.
Again, going back to you talking about like a parkour type thing, and this made me think about, this would be a lot of fun as like a two-player or four-player competitive racing game like you would see in Speedrunners or Runbo, where, but in first person or third person instead. And so you have these different hallways that you can choose to go down, and these ever-branching pathways all moving forwards. You're trying to get there as fast as possible. You've got enemies. Maybe you can redirect into other rooms, or you can, if you spy on your friend's screen, that he's entering a hallway with a bunch of red spinning blades, then maybe you can shoot a red enemy and make that journey a little bit harder. So it's a way of affecting the other people's routes through the under the mechanics of this first-person shooter without directly shooting at them.
Yeah, and that would also require strategic decisions, because if you're stopping to kill enemies, especially if they're if they're beef gates, then removing a red enemy would give you a terrain advantage over your opponent, because now there's some deadly obstacle in the way that they can no longer see and they have to navigate past. But you might have wasted so much time killing that enemy that maybe they were able to blow past that. So I think you would definitely divide it into two tiers of players, where those who focus on killing enemies, but I think you would also run the risk of having a, like a top tier of players who can navigate every level without fighting anything, and they would just blow past all that and never have to worry about it. So there might be a problem there with that as far as competitive multiplayer goes.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a course memorization going on that they know how to navigate all these different fields, I guess the way to solve for that would be to introduce some level of randomization.
Procedurally generate everything.
Right, yeah. Also, I think just as a core idea, this kind of first person racing game, hallway racer, that allows some level of like interference between the two players, it can be really fun, especially if you do have to sacrifice some of your own momentum to trigger some of these. I'm thinking about maybe there's a faraway enemy that's kind of tucked away in a in an always visible location, like in the center of the map, but you have to really like stop and snipe it, you know, by pulling out your rifle and steadying your aim. And so you lose quite a bit of time, but maybe it can really mess with the course of the other person.
Or another thing you could do to make things more competitive is you could implement some kind of combo system involving the parkour, where the higher you build your combo meter, you can either use it to restore your visibility on your side, or you can use it to more quickly and efficiently kill the enemies that would interfere with your enemy's side of things. So like if you do like, I don't know, 5 wall jumps to a grind and then you land on the enemy's head, it's an instant kill.
Yeah, that's interesting because it also gives you a sense of like a Tony Hawk type of movement.
Yeah, Tony Hawk's Mass Murder or something like that.
Yeah. There's very few other games that get that satisfying a sense of movement and mobility of being able to take advantage of like literally anything in the environment. I think it'd be fun if there was also a few other types of power-ups that are, you know, separate from the making things invisible. Like if you could pick up some sort of a, like a collectible that changes the direction of gravity for all of the players for maybe a limited amount of time, or maybe until somebody picks up one that, that shifts it in a different direction. And so kind of like Mario Kart, it like getting that lightning bolt, it instantly affects the progress of everyone. And if everyone's in a hallway, maybe with some gaps that they have to avoid, but you know, I don't want it to just send everyone else off into space necessarily. They should be able to keep running, but just something to keep them on their toes. Yeah. Hallways or like inside of tubes, like you would see in an F-Zero game, something like that to kind of change up the terrain of a racing game to something that we're not quite as familiar with. I'm liking the way this is going.
Yeah, it sounds like an interesting game. I would definitely be interested in playing it on Switch.
That's right. That is your thing. You are a big Switch enthusiast.
I'm staying on brand.
As has everyone been, really, to some extent or another. It's been a very successful year for the system. But anyways, that's about all the time that we have to talk about that one. We give ourselves, most of the time, a pretty hard 10-minute cutoffs just to make sure that we're not spending so much time rinsing every little thing out of a idea that, you know, we want to leave some room for interpretation from the listeners, some room to further iterate upon it in the future. We don't want to have the final say on anything that we do here. So that is that. That is our 10 minutes. I'll need to come up with a name for this one. And it's changed a little bit since the original pitch, and I like that. Something like Hall Runner would be, it could be catchy if it develops a community around it. Not immediately eye-catching on the Steam library, but it's not the worst.
Yeah, there are way more generic names out there.
All the good ones, like Runbow. That's a good one. That's already taken, though.
You don't get those twice. It's just not fair.
Yep. Let's move on to whatever you're bringing us today. We have not discussed this beforehand, so I'll be, as with every week, I'll be hearing this for the first time just now. So what kind of video game pitch are you bringing us today?
Well, like most of my best ideas, I stole this from a movie.
Okay, perfect.
In Back to the Future Part 3, there's that scene where Marty is running from Mad Dog Tannen, who's waiting outside for him out in the Old West, in the Mythic West of American mythology. He is inspired by a Clint Eastwood movie that he saw in Back to the Future Part 2 to put a iron plate underneath his poncho, and then goes outside and lets Mad Dog shoot him. And it just reflects off of the plate. Mm-hmm. And then he beats the snot out of Mad Dog Tannen, and it's a great scene. My idea was something like that. There's been a few Old West games already that are kind of building on the shootout scene, like especially I think Red Dead Redemption in its multiplayer mode has that really memorable Mexican standoff, which begins every single multiplayer match and always makes things very interesting and unpredictable. But I was thinking of combining that kind of mode with a crafting mode where you are locked in a room, or maybe you're locked in just one half of the town and your opponent is in the other half of the town, and you have to build the weirdest machine that you possibly can to kill your opponent with when you have your big high noon showdown on Main Street.
Well, we will start the clock right there. Yeah, so this is interesting. I like that you introduced the Back to the Future similarity there, because I think it would be cool if you have, you know, you're in this room with all sorts of different kind of Banjo-Kazooie nuts and bolts type of assortment of objects to combine them into some sort of a killing machine. But also you could use those same things to make like armor for yourself. And so, you know, if you want to turn a a buzz saw on its side, then you can wear that as a kind of a bulletproof vest. I mean, it would be a little uncomfortable to sit down, but you know, you just need to survive the next 30 seconds, essentially. So being able to repurpose, maybe putting everything into the killing machine, maybe putting almost everything into the armor to make yourself kind of nigh indestructible, and just letting your little tiny killing machine eventually do its job. But it has kind of the fun of both like a Minecraft, like a creating type game, and also like those Robot Wars TV shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of BattleBots set in the Old West, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
that's the elevator pitch right there.
Yeah, the set's like a fun steampunk type of aesthetic as well, where it's more kind of Old West future instead of the Victorian future.
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of objects would you like to see in this room?
I think you're on the right track with buzzsaws. I'm also imagining more like blunt instruments. Mm-hmm. Or like if you want to make six shooters, you would have those at your disposal. But like I'm thinking more like cannons, very rudimentary and just blunt instrument things. Like you could come out with a six shooter if you really wanted to build it. But I think the more what you have would be a big blunderbuss that just fires nails or something like that. Just simpler ideas that actually really look like the junk that you're making things out of.
I think one very common touch point that we keep bringing up on this show is the Spore Creature Creator, how it you can just kind of assemble creatures very easily, and the game pretty much just figures out based on anything that you give it how this thing walks and how it communicates and how it attacks. And so I could see something like that where you basically just have a blank slate, you attach objects in any way that you think will work, and then kind of figures out like what it can use to locomote itself, to drag itself along. If you give it a wheel, or if you give it a, you know, even if it only has a cannon, then it has to use that to somehow drag itself along the ground. And you're given control of this really clunky, really, you know, MacGyvered together machine. And it's supposed to be very inelegant and kind of comedic in that way. But as both of these Frankenstein machines are kind of like inching towards the other person, trying to get that attack in. And you can either go straight for the goal of attacking the other player, or mm-hmm. you can try to take out their robot or, you know, whatever they've built to protect yourself. But yeah, it's like chess in that way. You can either busy yourself with all the pawns, or you can go straight for the king.
Yeah, like there could definitely be a strategic aspect to it like that. Like every creation has a power source, and like you can win if your enemy runs out of power before you do, or you mm-hmm. can just cut the head off and just take out your enemy entirely just with overwhelming power. And I'm imagining everything in your room being not necessarily random, but mm-hmm. not preset. So that way you have to change up your strategy every time. You can't just keep building the same Uber machine that works every time that you found on Reddit. You actually have to know what you're doing and what you can make with what you have in front of you.
Although it would be fun if you could set up like a community challenge where somebody could choose what's in the room, and then both people get the same room and they are participating in this person's challenge to see what the most creative killer machine they can make out of all these parts are.
Yeah, like they're called strings or something. The codes that games like Minecraft and Binding of Isaac use to determine.
Right, yeah.
I'm forgetting the full name
of
it.
Like a seed.
Yeah, a seed. That's the word. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You could have a seed that different groups of people could use if they want to compete in the same area or if you even want to have a tournament. You could have seeds. That way everybody is working from the same base, but the core game there you're learning from, everything's random.
So how do we feel about the two players? Do they have the same assortment of objects, or do they both have different objects?
Well, that's the difference between symmetrical and asymmetrical.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, a competitive play, and it's really hard to get asymmetrical balanced, but when you mm-hmm. do it, it's a much more interesting game. So I would say the long-term goal would be asymmetrical.
Yeah, you'd really have to, through probably a lot of software testing,
mm-hmm.
Try to kind of weight each of the objects for how lethal or how useful they are ultimately. And I guess as long as there's an equal weight between the two rooms, then it should kind of balance itself out. But yeah, I know how that gets complicated as certain objects might complement each other better than others. And, you know,
yeah, like the situation you get where you happen to get two awesome items that just break the game and you've got yourself a free win. That happens. It doesn't matter how much you balance, that happens. But hopefully if it was well balanced, that situation would be reduced to a minimum, so it wouldn't happen.
Yeah, it would also be fun to be able to set the size of the rooms and thus like how many objects are in the room. And so, you know, if you're hosting like a Twitch competition or something with a lot of viewers, it might be a lot of fun to see like enormous contraptions made of like hundreds of materials. And if you're just playing, you know, single games and you want to get done in like 2 minutes a match, then you want a much smaller room with a more manageable assortment of objects to choose from.
Yeah, that would definitely factor into the difficulty or even just how fast you want the game to go.
This makes me think of there's a VR game called Fantastic Contraption. That's all about, I've not played it myself, but I think it's about, it kind of sets up like physics-y challenges and gives you a bunch of like silly looking physics objects that you can stick together and try to create some sort of a contraption that performs this physics task. This doesn't necessarily have to be in VR, but yeah, that would be a good touch point for development anyways. And also there's a game in early access that's fairly popular, I think, called Catapult, is it? Catapult or Trebuchet or something like that.
Yeah, I think I've seen it.
Yeah, yeah. It's about creating like medieval siege weaponry. And I think there's some level of customizability. I don't think there's the same like restriction of materials necessarily, but you kind of watch how this siege mechanism works in the physics space during play.
Yeah, or even a mode like in Kerbal Space Program where you're building something achieve a specific goal, maybe more abstract than just kill the other guy, you know, but that would be for like a single player mode.
Yeah, it would be interesting as well if you could like steal some of the weapons somehow from your enemy. Like if you're able to attach like a magnet onto your, maybe that's kind of sacrificing an arm. I mean, if there is a prime placement for a blade or something on your robot and you decide instead to put like a glue patch or a magnet patch or whatever, then you're using valuable real estate, but at the same time you might be able to steal a more useful weapon from your enemy if you can maneuver yourself into it in just the right way so they don't have that weapon and now you do. So it's kind of a double benefit that it gives you.
Or even like in the build phase, you could actually use resources to build like a little drone or something that'll sneak into your enemy's base and steal some of their supplies. Oh. So you have to use some of your resources in the build phase instead of on your final machine to do that. And you don't get to decide what the drone steals. It's just going to take something at random. So there's some risk there. But if you got in a particularly bad roll on your items, that might help you out.
Yeah, or maybe just to see what they're doing.
Yeah.
Gives you a little like 10-second peek at what they have that could be useful in this type of game. Anyways, that's all the time that we have for that one. Let's see if we can come up with a good name for this one. Did you come in with any name in your mind?
I had Junktown was the best that I came up with, but
I like that actually.
Okay.
Junktown. High Noon in Junktown.
Oh, that's better. Yes, High Noon in Junktown. There we go.
I like that. It reminds me of New Junk City from Earthworm Jim back in the old days. I wonder if New Junk City and New Donk City are the same place in different time periods. Like once everything's kind of gone to crap.
Well, that's a disturbing thought.
Yeah,
it's that's already right. That's, disturbing enough that New Donk City is apparently built by the Kongs, but there's no Kongs there. So
it's weird because, you know, we were just talking about that on Twitter the other day, that it's weird that obviously it's weird that they named some of the, like the streets and stuff after Donkey Kong characters when Donkey Kong was the villain of the game that Pauline came from. But not only that, they named them after Donkey Kong from the arcade Donkey Kong's grandson's friends, which seems like a weird, like three steps removed because Cranky Kong in the Donkey Kong Country games is the original Donkey Kong. And they just name stuff after other characters in the Donkey Kong Country series, which is like, yeah, not even related to that Donkey Kong incident. So, yeah, I'm not really sure, but
well,
whatever.
Whether Donkey Kong is really the villain of Donkey Kong is up to your interpretation, because Donkey right. Kong was, the original Donkey Kong was Jumpman's pet, and Jumpman abused him, so he kidnapped Pauline and ran away.
Interesting.
So, yeah, Donkey Kong's not behaving himself, but he's also an animal who's being abused by his owner, so it's best probably not to think about this too much, because we are talking about Nintendo games here, which is gameplay first, story second. So, but there it is.
Oh, that's interesting. I have to do a deep dive on the Donkey Kong lore. There's more that I was missing. Anyways, we're going now to a listener correspondence. This is a pitch that was sent in from one of our lovely listeners. And if you would like to submit any pitches, you can do that at playwrightcast.com/pitch. That'll take you straight to the pitching portal. Or if you just go to playwrightcast.com, then that will take you to our front page where you can listen to previous episodes or read some of the descriptions. You can get a link to the talented musician who supplied our theme song, or take you to the pitching portal there as well. You can also email us, playwrightcast@gmail.com. That is spelled PLAYWRITECAST. This comes from Zach Singer, who is another correspondent from the Kanan Rinse Sound of Play stable, where I'm familiar with that name. He says, "Hey guys, longtime listener, first time writer. The idea I'm pitching is actually an idea my dad had. He knows I develop games in my free time as a hobby, and one day he pitched an idea for a game to me and asked if I could make it. While it's something I would love to try making, I'm not sure when I'll get to it, as I only develop games on the side while working a full-time job, and I have a number of other projects I'm committed to. So I was curious to know what you guys think of the idea and how you would flesh it out more. In a nutshell, the idea is a commuting home from work simulator, and the goal is to find the quickest route home during rush hour. I imagine the game would be played from a first-person perspective, and you could have a GPS in your car mounted on the dashboard. The GPS can show you heavy traffic in certain areas, so you'll have to examine traffic patterns to try to find routes to circumvent traffic jams, and maybe you could turn on the radio, which would give you more recent reports on car accidents or construction in certain areas that will affect traffic. Maybe the GPS shows that traffic is moving only a little slow on a particular highway, but when you turn on the radio, you hear a report of a major accident that just happened over there and isn't reflected on the GPS just yet." Let's see, he leaves a nice little message here at the bottom that says, "And thanks so much for your hard work you guys put into the podcast. I really enjoy it, and the game ideas you guys talk about help me feel motivated and inspired to create. If you read my pitch on the show, I'm looking forward to listening to that episode during my commute." Thank you for that. That it's neat to know that we have as developers, even if they're just, you know, enthusiast developers. I mean, not to say that that's any less. Some of our some of the greatest video game projects come from people who are working on an enthusiast basis until they made it big with their first kind of standout project. But yeah, greatly appreciate this, and let's see what we can do with Zach Singer's dad's idea. So this makes me think of a lot of things. There was a game on mobile that I don't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but you played several people commuting around a kind of a single screen environment that showed, you know, a nice size portion of a neighborhood, and they all needed to enter the screen from somewhere and get somewhere else. And you would have to touch like the left and right side of the screen on your phone to steer them in one way or the other. It was supposed to be a little sloppy and unpredictable, but you would do one at a time and navigate them on their route. But the thing was that they would repeat that route, and the next person would enter the screen, and you would have to steer them, and they would just kind of keep repeating those loops over and over again, kind of like a music sequencer. And you would have to keep them all from crashing into each other as they're trying to get to their different locations, as more and more of them enter this continually refreshing Groundhog's Day type loop. So it's kind of a fun thing, but it made me think of how interesting it is to control more than one car in this scenario. So what if, I'm going to put a different spin on this pitch, what if you play as like the collective brain of the GPS, and let's say at the beginning you have one car that you're trying to direct, and you just need to get that person from point A to point B in the shortest amount of time possible. You're kind of looking at your map, and you can give recommendations for where to turn and what routes to take. You can maybe even like draw them on a touchscreen device with your own fingers, the route that you think would be best for that person. And as things change, as you hear stuff on the radio, or if you see things start to bubble up on your map, maybe a protest is walking through, maybe there's a parade, maybe there's an accident somewhere, then you can on the fly kind of redraw that route. But in level 2, maybe you have to manage 3 people at the same time, all trying to get somewhere. And, you know, later on, maybe you have to manage like up to 11 people. Oh. And maybe there's natural disasters and stuff like that. So it's always kind of constantly building on each other, kind of like a mini Metro as a recent game that starts out simple, seems manageable, and then adds a lot of complexity as you get further into it.
Yeah, that was my initial idea, was to simplify it down from, instead of being a first person perspective with the map on the GPS, was just have the GPS just be the whole game, just that be the whole thing.
Yeah,
because that would actually, I think he said knowledgeably, having no knowledge of this thing, but I think that would be much easier to program, and it would also really open up the platforms it could be offered on. You could have put it on a tablet that way.
Yeah, that's true.
I like your idea. I think that it would be even more interesting if there was competing necessities between each of the people you're trying to get to in the later levels. Like one person needs to get to a school to pick up their kid on time, and the shortest way across is to go across the bridge, but another person needs to take the ferry, and the ferry has to raise the bridge to go through it. So one of your people is going to get screwed there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really becomes basically a city management sim. And you've got to work out the best way to get everybody to where they are without completely wrecking their lives.
Yeah, that's an interesting wrinkle as well.
We don't just have to do fictional cities on this. You can actually base parts of this game, if not all of it, on existing cities and existing commutes that people go on. And if you are connected to the internet, it can actually draw real-time traffic information to create the traffic you're going through. So you're literally turning other people's misery in traffic in their commute into a game.
That's funny, except I see these rounds being somewhat fast-paced and somewhat, you know, action-packed. Traffic generally takes like maybe an hour to build up and then lasts for 4 hours, then takes an hour to kind of ramp back down. So you wouldn't have the same immediacy of the changing traffic conditions, but it would be like a fun, maybe like a more relaxing, less, less action packed mode to just navigate people around these cities. And maybe, you know, there's a street that you just can't use for the entirety of your play session because it's just backed up with traffic, but when you log on in the middle of the night, then that road is open to you, so that opens up new possibilities in the cities that you're familiar with. It could also really help you navigate your own cities if there's places in Seattle that I haven't driven to yet and I wouldn't know off the top of my head how to get to, but something like this could really help.
Yeah, and if this is successful and becomes comprehensive enough, it would actually be good training for taxi drivers.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean,
London taxi drivers.
Yeah, we are driving this from just game to full-on simulation now, so maybe that's not what Zach was going for.
Let's roll back into the kind of gamey space.
Yeah.
And so let's think about one of the things that I was thinking about was maybe you have sources of information that kind of conflict. I mean, Zach hit on that a little bit in description there, where the radio will announce something before it's reflected on the GPS map. But maybe you have like multiple data sources like Apple Maps and Google Maps that are both kind of feeding you different information. So you have to determine like, okay, normally like Google has the most accurate maps, but it doesn't have very good traffic monitoring. So I'm going to switch to Waze for that or whatever the equivalent would be. And Apple Maps just probably never use. Yeah, or if you have different types of maps that don't necessarily reflect the types of metrics that you would be most interested in seeing mm-hmm. for some of the challenge levels. Maybe you have like a map that is a constantly fluctuating, like a population heat map. And so you kind of have to think, okay, there's a lot of people concentrated in this area. Is that because there's a park there and that's just where people hang out? Or is that because there's traffic on this road? Let me check with a weather map, and let me check with the elevation map. And so all these like these separate pieces of data that you're trying to extrapolate traffic information from.
Yeah, I'm also imagining having different sorts of drivers as well. Going back to your idea of having multiple drivers in multiple times, like they could have different independence levels. And like the more independent that the driver is, the more they're going to want to deliberately not follow your instructions while you're playing as somebody else. Where at the other end of the spectrum, you could have another person who maybe the map that they're working off of doesn't give them the best advice. And if you're not watching them closely, they are going to follow your instructions straight into a lake.
I've had a friend, he was coming up to visit me when I was living in Bellingham, which is a city that is just about as far north in the United States as you can get, in the continental United States anyways. And he was coming up to visit me on the freeway, and he just kept on going because his GPS didn't tell him to get off the freeway and ended up in Canada. So, yeah. I guess that type of person does exist.
Yeah, I've ridden with them.
yeah. But I was thinking also, maybe these drivers could be different types of drivers. Maybe you can have like the equivalent of a Lyft or an Uber driver who has to make a lot of stops, but they're all really close by to each other. And so you don't have to think too much about the traffic because they're only ever, you know, rounding a couple of corners at any given time, but you do always have to draw that route. And so you're always kind of out of the corner of your eye and corner of your mind, kind of keeping your eye on where he needs to go and just drawing like a little click line to satisfy him while you're doing more extensive drawings for all of the rest of the people that are making more long commutes to different places. Or maybe you have to navigate and ambulance, when that comes online, then you basically give that top priority and make sure that it gets through no matter what.
Yeah, I'm also, I don't know, maybe you have an idea of what we could do with this, but I'm imagining, what would it be like if one of your drivers was a school bus?
Yeah, exactly. That would be a good one as well.
What kind of situations would that create?
Because that doesn't have a lot of flexibility with this route. You know, if it's, it needs to stop at all of these different places. Mm-hmm. And so maybe if there is a little block of traffic, then you can go around it. But, you know, normally you have to at least get to each of these children's houses.
And like a school bus, just by the nature of what it does, would actually create the kind of commuting conditions that you would want your other drivers to avoid. Yeah. So that would be a great example of what I'm talking about, the priorities of one driver interfering with the others.
Yeah, you can probably create all sorts of chaos as well. Oh, if you had to factor in one-way roads and everything, and if you steered them down the wrong way, that could be a big problem. But we're just about out of time. So as much as I would love to explore the intricacies of one-way roads and roundabouts and stuff like that, that we'll have to wait on that and throw that back to Zach and see what he comes up with from there. We always keep the conversation open and just see where the community takes it. So anyways, if you would like to submit something just like Zach did, you can do that on our website, playwrightcast.com, or at playwrightcast@gmail.com, or just tweet us at playwrightcast. We'd also encourage you to head on to iTunes or whatever kind of podcasting app that you prefer to use, and go ahead and give us a rating, a review. That does help us out a lot. And just share with your friends. Even if it's just one friend, you can just say, hey, here's something that you might be interested in. You're a creative type. You're a video gamer type. Why not just go on these flights of imagination with these two weirdos and see where it takes you? I think we end up in some pretty fun places sometimes. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I would like to thank Andrew Brown for joining me today. Always a very reliable and always a very thought-provoking guest, regardless of the type of show that we're hosting. It's always, you never let me down before.
Oh, thanks. That's very nice to hear.
And of course, we'd like to thank the writer of our theme music, that is Protodome. The song is Hello World from the album Blue Noise. we would encourage anyone to go and seek out Protodome's work because it's excellent, as Q frequently tells us. And that about wraps it up for today. We have, just to kind of lead us out of the show, I'd like to give one miniature pitch, just something for you to all chew on for the next week until we return with another show with Q back on the podcast. And this is maybe something I should probably keep in my pocket for a main pitch someday, but I think I'm just going to leave it here and see where you guys all go with it. And it is the ability to climb famous buildings in VR. So we'll see you next week.